from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll talk with pianist Rich Glaser about his newest CD.
I'll chat with singer and songwriter Carrie Newcomer about her new book and CD.
And I'll find out about an exhibit of smartphone photographs. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Growing up in Indianapolis, pianist Rich Glaser had a musical epiphany. That discovery has led him to his career as an award-winning pianist and musical raconteur. Though he's based in Northern California now, Rich retains deep connections to his Hoosier home. And Sharon Gamble recently gave him a call to learn about his new CD, his eighth, From Broadway to Hollywood, and about a new PBS special he was about to film.
So, remind our listeners how you got to know this fabulous music in the first place.
Right. When I was 9 years old, I saw the film Girl Crazy with Vicki Rudy and Judy Garland on just my parents' old black and white television set in the 70s. And just, I don't know, that old music, that big band music, Tommy Dorsey, hearing those Gershwin tunes, seeing Judy Garland sing Embraceable You and But Not For Me.
Ooh.
That's something inside of me as a nine-year-old kid. And so luckily my aunt and my mother were able to nurture my curiosity, and they took me downtown to the public library there on St. Clair Street. And in those days you could check out old sheet music, and we checked out a bunch of old sheet music. I remember we'd go through it together, and they talked to me about people like Sophie Tucker and Billy Rose and Fanny Bryce and Al Jolson when we came across their sheet music. And I just loved hearing the stories and looking at old sheet music. And so a curiosity and a passion was being born at that time. And I think, you know, it just all started then.
And your mom and your aunt had had some sort of insider knowledge about these folks.
Right. My mom was, of course, an actress, and she was in the resident company of the Avondale Playhouse. If some of the listeners might remember that, at the 10th of the Meadows set in the 1960s. And also lived in New York for a time in the 1940s, where she was a page at CBS, bringing radio audiences in and out of the radio shows. I remember she told me one story was about she saw Jeanette McDonald, and her hair was a very light pink, matched the color of her shoes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Hey, so that's not just a current trend.
No, right.
So was there something, was it the melodies that kind of hit you in the heart, or what?
Right.
What do you think it was?
I think the melodies, yes. And I'm kind of, I was just an old soul. I mean, now I know that I'm an old soul, but I didn't know I was an old soul when I was nine, but obviously I must have been. And just something about the sound and the music and the romance and how it represented America. Of course, you know, I didn't know a lot of these things, but I think I instinctually knew this stuff, and that's what, you know, maybe why I fell in love with it.
Did your family, I mean, I'm thinking about so in the 1970s, so this is kind of classic.
This is
Rolling
Saturday
Stones
Night
and all this kind right. of stuff. Did your right. family ever look at you like, well, you're an alien?
Oh, absolutely, of course. And not to mention my classmates at West Lane Junior High School.
Now, did they tease you, or were some of them curious?
Mostly tease.
Yeah.
Mostly tease.
Well, you showed them.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like you say, those melodies and what they represented, and I just felt close. close to them at some level. I felt connected to them. I felt like I was somehow just a part of that universe.
Before your exposure to this music, you were certainly born a musician, but what do you recall, kind of what kind of music you had been attracted to before getting introduced to these great American songbook kinds of works?
Well, gosh, you know, I was just taking, you know, I was 9 years old when this was happening, and before that, I started piano lessons when I was 6, and, you know, I was just playing, you know, I was taking lessons from a lady named Mrs. Chenoweth, who lived on College Avenue, and she just had me in those method books, and really, that's all the music I really knew. I mean, I really didn't know much about anything else. And then, of course, I knew that if I was going to play the piano seriously, that at the age of 10, 11, 12 years old, whatever, that I couldn't spend my time 100% dedicated to this music because I had to study the classics. I had to study Chopin and Mozart and Beethoven and Brahms to really give me the discipline and the foundation of being a pianist. And, of course, fell in love with that literature as well as I got a little bit older. And then as I got even older after college and decided to spend all my time in this genre of the American popular song, I took the discipline that I learned from studying these great masters of Chopin and Mozart, Beethoven and Brahms, and applied that knowledge to interpreting the American popular song and injecting my discipline that I learned into songs like Body and Soul and Someone to Watch Over Me and things like that, so that when I play these songs, they're studied with the same intent and the same discipline as, let's say, a Chopin Nocturne.
Because the musicianship transcends whatever's on your music stand.
Right, absolutely. And I love to play really wonderful, lush, rare arrangements of these songs done by great pianists of the past.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of dug up out of libraries and collections and things like that, you know. And when I play Someone to Watch Over Me, you know, stylized by Stan Freeman in the year of 1954, I try to handcraft every single note like one would do when they play the masters.
Sure. And, you know, bringing up the arrangements, that's a great point, because some of these tunes are so beloved and so well-known and have been around for 40, 60, 80 years that everybody and his brother has arranged them. So,
absolutely.
So, how do you decide? Let's say Embraceable You, let's say you do a little digging and find 50 different arrangements.
Wonderful arrangements. There's, of course, the Earl Wilde arrangement, which I've recorded.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was the one on my new CD, From Broadway to Hollywood, is done by Johnny Morris, who's kind of a wonderful society pianist that I found and that lives in Palm Springs. We became friends. And he's rearranged a bunch of stuff, and somehow his arrangements speak to me, and I enjoy playing them, and they fit the hand quite nicely, and the voicings are very, very beautiful and atmospheric, and it's wonderful. So I really kind of relate to his arrangements, and I'm always out looking and commissioning between looking for the contemporary arrangers, commissioning arrangements from friends of mine, and then finding arrangements done from the past. I've been able to develop quite a library of these wonderful songs.
Not only that, but you've encountered some amazing people. And in fact, as we're having this conversation on the phone, you're getting ready to do some recording for a new TV special, a new public television special.
Yes,
let's talk about that.
I'm excited about it. Right. And it's basically going to be a companion piece to this CD, my brand new CD, From Broadway to Hollywood, where I'll play a lot of the repertoire and some more, but mostly off the new CD. In a television studio, and then go out into the field and interview people that were directly involved with that music. So, for instance, one of the pieces that I'll play is So in Love from Kiss Me, Kate.
Mm.
And we went out and in L.A. and interviewed Patricia Morrison, who was the original Kate on Broadway in 1948. She's 99 years old.
God love her.
Yes, and she can still sing.
And memory in good shape, it sounds like.
And memory in good shape, absolutely. So we have these wonderful stories of our Hoosier friend Cole Porter and what it was like to work with him firsthand. And it's just wonderful. So she'll introduce the song, and then I'll play it, and then I'll talk, and that's going to be kind of like the flow of this television show.
That's fun.
And then we went back to another cool thing we did is we went back to the Warner Brothers pre-recording stage in Burbank, and I recorded two songs from A Star Is Born from the 1954 version with Judy Garland, and that's the space where it actually was recorded in. So there I was with the Steinway in the pre-recording stage where Judy recorded it in 1954 for the film.
Wow. Do you feel like you're sort of channeling some energy to being in the actual space like
course.
That?
I mean, whether you do or not, you like to think so.
It's in your head
and in your
hands.
Right. Yeah. And you use that energy to try to inspire the best performance that you can give.
Sure. So what's the timetable on this special? Is it coming out?
Well, I'm hoping, we're going to shoot it tomorrow. We're going to shoot the performance segments tomorrow. The interviews are all done. So after tomorrow, it'll be a question of just editing it, getting it into the PBS system. So my plan, my hope, is the spring of 15.
Fantastic.
Around April of next year.
Yeah.
Is my hope.
Well, I hope you have occasion to come home and do a concert in conjunction with
Wouldn't that be the coolest thing? That's what I've envisioned. Wouldn't it be cool to a concert in conjunction with this, how it would work? I have a great idea for it, where we would show all of the interview clips, let's say on Blu-ray in 1080p high definition, and then instead of going to the studio where I play the pieces, I'll play them live.
Ooh.
So it'll really kind of be the show, except I'm playing the pieces live and not in the studio.
Yeah, love that. All right, so this is a call out to potential presenters of Rich Glaser in spring of 2015.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Drop us a line at artofthematter@wfyi.org and we'll connect you. Love it.
Sure. Yeah, but that's my idea. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, break a leg on your performances.
Right, right, absolutely. Right.
And thank you so much, and the very best of luck. And stay tuned, listeners. We'll tell you how to find out much more about Rich Glaser and about this new Broadway to Hollywood album.
Sharon Gamble with native Hoosier pianist Rich Glaser. We heard him in Embraceable You from his new CD called From Broadway to Hollywood. The disc includes 19 tracks and such beloved tunes as My Funny Valentine and Where or When. Learn more about Rich and purchase From Broadway to Hollywood at richglaser.com. That's richardglazier.com, and the last name is G-L-A-Z-I-E-R.com, richardglazier.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer has recently released her 12th studio recording titled A Permeable Life. It's her first work to also come out with a companion book, A Permeable Life, Poems and Essays. Travis DiNicola spoke with her about the new work and got to hear a few songs that Carrie played live in our studio.
Carrie, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
What a pleasure, and so glad you brought your guitars and, of course, brought your new book and CD, A Permeable Life, Poems and Essays is the book, and then, of course, there's the CD that goes along with it. Let me ask you a bit about this. The cover of both is just gorgeous, this great image of these giraffes that are sort of going through the water, their necks sticking out, and there's a person in a little sort of rowboat and a sunset and some mountains in the distance. Tell me about this image.
Oh, well, you know, there's a wonderful artist. He's from Canada. His name is Hugh Syme. And he's been doing the cover art on my albums for many years now, many albums.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a conversation about the album, about the songs. I sent him the songs. And he said, well, I've got an idea. And he sent me this image. And it's a little there's giraffes.
It's pretty whimsical.
It's very whimsical.
I mean, you don't often see giraffes, like, you know, making their way through the water.
But. No, and you know, I'm actually in the boat, so.
Is it? Okay, I wondered if that was you.
So it's kind of giraffes looking at me, and me looking at the mysteries, and we're kind of looking at it all in terms of perspective. So I liked that it was beautiful and yet whimsical, didn't take itself too seriously, but also lovely at the same time.
Tell me a bit about the title, too, A Permeable Life.
A Permeable Life. The title comes from one of the poems that is part of the collection.
And we'll hear that in just a little bit, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, the idea of a permeable life is to live without this hard wall between you and the world, you know, that you allow the world in with all of its loveliness and confusion and delight and disappointment. But you also allow your truest self to show up in the world, which takes a certain amount of risk. It's living permeably instead of, like I said, living with that hard wall between yourself and the world.
Sure, sure. These are very personal poems and songs. Spirituality is a big part of your work, it seems to me. This seems like a very special project for you.
It is. It is. It was produced by Paul Mayhern down in Bloomington, and I actually recorded it in my home area in Bloomington.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, this one was close to my heart.
Very personal.
Very personal, very close to my heart. And the way we recorded it, I think, reflects that. When you listen to the album, the voice was recorded in a way that it feels like I'm right in the room with you.
Mm-hmm.
That these songs were meant to be heard as if we were talking across a kitchen table, or I was singing to you across the kitchen table, not so much from a hall or a music hall or, you know, an arena or something, but that close, because they're those kinds of songs, and the songs are very conversational in that sense too.
That's a great image and appropriate, since you are right across the studio table from me right now, and you're about to sing a song. What's the first number you're going to perform?
It's called A Light in the Window. And it's about that kind of hope you see out in the distance. And when I say hope, I don't mean like the candy-coated kind of hope or the Hallmark card hope, but the kind of hope that you get up in the morning and you try one more time to make the world just a little better place. And then the next morning you get up and you do it again. And the next morning you get up and you have been disappointed. And you do it again. It's about the faithfulness of hope. So that's what the song's about.
Well, let's take a listen.
Looking out at the night beyond the driver's wheel, a curving hips made of snow in the winter fields. There's a house set way back where the lamplight glows like a star out in the cold, filled with people I'll never know, who left a light in the window. What would I change if the choice were mine? I was doing the best I knew at the time. And every door that was opened and door that closed, all the things that made me grow, set me off down another road, off to look for a light in the window. Now the old has already passed away, but the new is too new to be born today. So I'm throwing out seeds on the winter snow as the cold wind begins to blow. Standing here on a new threshold, I can see a light, there's a light in the window. And the world is made of stone, and the world is made of glass, and the world is made of light, and it's moving very fast. Pass from mystery to mystery, so I won't lie. I don't know what happens when people die, but I hope that I see you walking slow, smiling wide as the sunrise grows. Drop my map with a thousand folds, in the distance I see it glow. There's a light, there's a light, there's a light in the window.
Carrie Newcomer, that was just beautiful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for sharing that. it's lovely to have you performing live here on Art of the Matter. And, of course, that's from your new CD, A Permeable Life. Now, you've recorded a dozen albums in your career, but this is your first book as well. And, again, there's a companion book, A Permeable Life, Poems and Essays, that that goes with this CD. How was that for you, writing, putting this book together? That's a whole new experience.
It was. It was really, really very, it was a new experience, definitely. But it made a lot of sense in that, If you lined up 11 songwriters and you asked them their process, you would get probably 14 ways that they do it,
mm-hmm.
right? But my process, more often than not, will start with a poem or an essay or a short story. Often, I've done quite a bit of writing before I write the song.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I start the song, I have all this language and ideas. I've been mulling it over, and I might actually pull even particular lines or ideas when I start the song then.
Sure.
So many of these poems and essays were the beginning, the starting point for a song. Not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some are just part of the theme of the book. But many of them were, you know, that that starting point for a song.
Would you read us the title poem, A Permeable Life?
Sure. A Permeable Life. I want to leave enough room in my heart for the unexpected, for the mistake that becomes knowing, for the knowing that becomes wonder, for the wonder that makes everything porous, allowing in and out all available light. An impermeable life is full to the edges, but only to the edges. It is a limited thing, like the pause at the center of a breath, neither releasing or inviting, with no hollow spaces for longing and possibility. I would rather live unlocked, and more often than not astonished, which is possible if I'm willing to surrender what I already think I know. So I will stay open and companionably friendly with all that passes out from the heart and comes in at a slant and shimmers just below the surface of things.
Carrie Newcomer reading from A Permeable Life, Poems and Essays. Carrie, we're thrilled to have you on Art of the Matter, which,
of course,
broadcasts throughout Central Indiana.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, thanks. But you're also going to be on a nationally broadcast public radio show coming up this fall, isn't that right?
Yes, I'll be on a nationally broadcast television show soon, actually, called Religion and Ethics, and that's a PBS national program. And then later on this fall, I'll be a guest on Krista Tippett's On Being.
Yeah, that's a great show.
Oh, love both programs, so I'm very excited to be a part of both those.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on that. That's pretty cool.
It's because I love the program so much. It's like, wow, that's great.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Well, we'll definitely be looking forward to hearing you on those shows and seeing you on those shows as they come up through the fall. But right now, I would love to hear another song, if that's all right.
Okay, and I should say, I do want to mention just about On Being. Mm-hmm. I really think it's one of the most, insightful, intelligent shows out there on the topic of culture, science, and spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And the intersection of all
great
those
discussions,
ideas.
Great guests. It's broadcast on WFYI on Sunday mornings.
Yeah,
just a great show.
Yeah, Krista's great.
Excellent.
Okay, so another song.
Yes, please.
Something really great happened to my songwriting when I gave myself permission to do a couple things. One was to write the song I write today.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of new songwriters, and myself included, when I was new at songwriting, I wanted to put all the sum of all my knowledge into every song, right? But usually a song is about one thing. This is the song I write today, and then I'll write another one tomorrow. I have a lot of songs in me. The second thing I gave myself permission to do was sound like a Hoosier.
Okay.
Yeah, that my most powerful voice would always be my most true voice. That I'll never sound like someone from the island of Manhattan, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. There's a lot of people to cover that voice, and I'm, not really concerned that there won't be enough voices covering that. But my most powerful voice would always be my truest voice. So I write about small things often, daily things, finding meaning in those small things. So this is about canning.
Okay.
I did some canning with a friend of mine and a bunch of women.
And what's the title of this one?
This is called The Work of Our Hands.
Okay.
Today, while it rained, I washed the jars. Then I lit a flame, set the water to start. And at the end of the day, lined up to cool and seal 12 pints of spiced peach jam, 20 jars of dill beans canned from an old recipe that my mother gave to me, because it's good to put a little bit by. But when the late snows fly, all that love so neatly canned by the work of our hands. Mm-hmm. They lay hands on boards and bricks and loud machines with shovels and rakes and buckets of soap they clean. And I believe that we should bless every shirt ironed and pressed. Salute the crews out on the roads, those who stock shelves and carry loads. Whisper thanks to the brooms and saws, dirty boots and coveralls. And bow my head to the waitress and nurse, and tip my hat to the farmer and clerk. All those saints with skillets and pans and the work of their hands. Laid out on the counter, pulled up out of hot water, the work of our hands so faithful and true. I make something barely there, music is little more than air. So now every year I'll put by tomatoes and pears, boil the lids and wipe the lid with a calloused fingertip. And I swear by the winter ground, we'll open one and pass the thing around. Let the light catch the jar, amber gold as a falling star. It's humble and physical, it's only love made visible. Yes, now I understand, it's the work of our hands.
Carrie, that just sounded great. Thank you again so much for coming in the studio with your guitars and playing for us today.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. I also just love this program. So,
well, thanks.
So I'm just delighted to be here and be part of your whole lineup.
Excellent. Well, and congratulations again on the new CD and book, Carrie Newcomer, A Permeable Life, Poems and Essays, and A Permeable Life, the CD. They can be found everywhere. And, of course, you can get them on your website as well. Again, thank you so much for coming in today, Carrie.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer. Her new CD and book are both titled A Permeable Life. You can get more information at carrienewcomer.com, CarrieNewcomer.com, or you can follow her on Facebook. Hey, Travis.
Yeah, Sharon.
Two words for you.
Two.
Fried food.
Fried food. Oh, it must be time for the state fair.
It is indeed, and we have just enough time to tell you about a couple other things that are going on our calendar. We call What Do We Do?
Well, there, you could bring fried food to see the Tempest if you want, because you can bring your own food and drink or buy food there. Tempest is playing this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, down at the White River State Park, 8 o'clock each night. Get there early for a good seat because it is free. You can also reserve tickets online at Heartland Actors' website, but just go and check out a good free play on the White River.
Indeed. Also this week, and this Saturday from 5 to 9 at Crown Hill Cemetery, the Dog Day of Summer. Just Dog Day of Summer.
The Dog Day.
The Dog Day. Jenny DeVoe sings and performs, and it's a benefit for IMPD's K-9 unit. How fun is that? Great venue, wonderful music, and a good cause. Find out more at crownhillfoundation.org.
And this is my quickest rundown of all the cool events coming up in August. You ready, Sharon?
Mm-hmm.
So get your calendars out and your pens out. Art Sparkle, which is the Art Center's big fun end of summer event, is on the 16th. And then, of course, Dig In is on the 17th. Great event. event down at White River State Park with lots of great food. Greek Fest, speaking of good food, August 22nd through the 24th.
Yummy.
And Feast of Lanterns, that wonderful East Side Festival at Spades Park, is on the 23rd. And oh yeah, that State Fair is going on as well.
Hey, that's all the time we have on this week's calendar, but get out there. There's still plenty of summer, and we'll be back next week with more fun things to do on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You know that iPhone commercial that claims that every day more photos are taken with iPhones than with cameras? Whether or not you believe it, one fact is undeniable. So many of us have smartphones at our sides day and night, they're becoming our go-to devices for photography. The JCC is hosting an iPhone photography competition and exhibit called Snap Post Share. And a class in it, too. Sharon Gamble invited two of the competitors' jurors, photographer Freddie Kelvin and photographer Rad Drew, to our studios to learn more.
So, Freddie, I want to start with you. I know you were a photographer long before smartphones came along. Do you remember when you first heard or read that phones were going to have cameras in them and what your response was?
I think it was probably about 6 or 7 years ago. I was rather slow to get into the smartphones, and my response was, how wonderful that now I have a device that I can use for photographing wherever I am, really for the first time. I don't even have to think about what will I take with me.
It's kind of an extension of your creativity then. It's
yes.
just always with you.
Yes, always, yes.
Mm-hmm. Rad, same question to you. Do you remember reading and thinking, oh, no, it's deteriorating the whole world of photography or anything like that?
Oh, no, not at all. I've been a photographer since I was a kid and studied photojournalism at IU and everything, so I've taken pictures for a long time. And I got my first iPhone in 2010, and I bought a phone. I didn't even think about it as a camera. And that was about the time Facebook was getting traction. And so I started noticing that there were photographers who I knew who were very respected traditional photographers who were posting images that they had taken with their iPhones. And I was really intrigued by that. So I began to write people. Most of them I didn't know. Some didn't respond and many did. And so through that, I made connections with people who are using the phone, and I became part of a secret group on Facebook. There was a group of professionals and a couple of people that weren't. And in that group, we all shared our images. And the only rule for the group was that you posted iPhone images only. And when you posted something, you talked about how you made it and what apps you used to do it. And so during that first year, we all learned so quickly, learning from each other, and someone would post a new app and we would all try it out. And through that experience, I just became enamored with the iPhone. Like Freddie was saying, it's something you have with you all the time. You don't have to think about carrying your camera or your gear. And it allows you to sort of find art in everyday activities.
So for someone who maybe hasn't gotten this sophisticated yet, what are some of the abilities that the apps give you? Are there like lighting apps or what kind of apps are there?
Well, you can use apps to sharpen your image. Any digital image today requires some sort of sharpening. You can use apps for that. You can use apps that will enhance the color and the structure of the image. So an image that may look pretty good, with a few adjustments in an app, you can make it look even better. So there are things like that. In many ways, it's kind of like if you've ever used Photoshop, many photographers use that for doing all of that kind of refining. the phone, it's almost like having Photoshop in the palm of your hand.
Wow.
And you use different apps to do many of the things that you might do in Photoshop.
So is the advent of, and I know we, bless their hearts, Apple probably isn't thrilled about the fact that we all use iPhone as a generic, like Kleenex as a generic for tissue, but and there certainly are other brands of smartphones, but do these smartphones, are they the equal to your best camera in your workshop?
No. They fall short of a highly expensive single-lens reflex camera.
In what way?
In resolution, in the degree of versatility, in how much zoom you can achieve with different substituted lenses. So they're not meant to equal, let's say, a $5,000 or $4,000 camera, which I don't even possess anyway. it's the universality of the iPhone and the ability, as Rad referred to stay with the original image or play with that image, maybe make it into something that's closer to a painting than a photograph, or somewhere in between the two. And you can be sitting in Starbucks and you can be doing the editing whenever you have a free moment. Instead of having to go back to the computer and Photoshop or Lightroom, it's right there in front of you.
Yeah. It's kind of the corollary to that saying that I don't know that I've ever heard an attribution, but the best camera that you have for a shot is the one that you have with you.
Absolutely.
Do you did you find yourself when you got your iPhone doing what you did maybe when you first got your first digital camera, which is just shooting too much, shooting everything because you could?
Not really. I think I tend to be selective and don't go berserk shooting every dog that comes down the path. But what the iPhone did for me is, for example, if I saw a soccer ball, well, I wouldn't normally be carrying a big boy or a big girl camera around if I'm watching some children playing soccer, but the iPhone's there.
Right.
If I see a leaf on the ground when I'm walking somewhere, maybe to a restaurant, and it appeals to me, pull out the iPhone. So I strongly believe that we're surrounded by all kinds of beauty and that we don't take the time to recognize and absorb the beauty. If we do, and having a camera with you all the time makes you think more about this inherent beauty around us, then you also have the chance to, instead of just experiencing it, to record it. And to me, that's the beauty of the iPhone. I choose to use it fairly selectively. Other people, much less so. Chacun a son goût.
Indeed. Yeah, hop on a lot of Facebook pages if you need proof of the maybe too liberal use of of the smartphone camera. Rad, what's something you've shot with your phone that you might not, that you might have missed that opportunity if you hadn't had the phone with you?
Oh, gee. Sitting in, waiting for my seat at a local restaurant, I was seated out in the kind of the waiting area, and across from me were three red chairs that were there, and I took my iPhone out and I created an image from what I saw in front of me. That's just one of many things. Like Freddie's saying, as you're walking down the street, you might take your iPhone out. I live in Irvington, which is a beautiful historic neighborhood, and just recently I was walking over in that area, and I saw a picket fence, a white picket fence, and I did a photograph of that fence with my iPhone. That turned out, you know, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kinds of things that that I see. It's almost as if I find myself looking for pictures all the time, in a way that I didn't before the phone. I'm always looking for interesting play of light on a subject, or I'll see something on my way to work. I often stop on my way into work and take pictures because I'll see something. And I try and take a different route to work every day so I can see something different. I just feel like my eye has become a little bit more attuned to looking for images that I think will be good.
You've both kind of said the same thing, which is that even if you never took that phone out and took that shot, you've changed as artists by having the capacity to be able to do that.
I think that's true. And I think for what I've seen too, many of us have been photographers for a long time, but a lot of the people that I see becoming very, very good photographers with the iPhone never used a camera before, never used a DSLR, don't understand a lot of the things about f-stop and all of the things that are part and parcel of photography. But by having the iPhone in their hand, it's sort of taken photography to a place that makes it accessible to people who it might not have been accessible to before. And what I see is people discovering a part of themselves that is highly creative and capable of some remarkable images, but they may never have known that before. And the phone has sort of made that easier to explore.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's paradigm shifting.
Well, I think it is. You asked a minute ago about, taking too many photographs or whatever, and we all know you can go out and look online and you'll see, images that are somebody's breakfast or whatever it is. And clearly there's a lot of that, and I'm not necessarily an advocate for that, but the flip side of that is I think, there's the adage that you have to take 1,000 images before you become proficient or 10,000 rather. And, I think what we're seeing is a lot of people are exploring their own creativity. So they're at a certain place, at a certain level, have a certain understanding of what they're capable of, and that's the picture they post. Now, you might be someplace else with where you are, and that picture might be satisfying to you or not.
Mm-hmm.
But for them, it's where they are, and it's a part of a progression toward perhaps something more advanced and more developed in what they're doing with their own development of their own creativity. And that's the thing about it for me. It's so much fun to grow that way and to watch other people grow and discover their creative talents that they may never have known existed.
Sure. What are you looking for as you're reviewing the shots that have been submitted for this exhibit? Is it different in any way from what you would look for in a film camera or a digital camera exhibit competition?
Well, I'll take that one or chime in, Freddie. But the iPhone's still basically and fundamentally a camera, first and foremost. So the things that apply to any photograph we look for: composition, how light is used in the image, sharpness of the image, is it a blurry picture? We look for those very fundamental things. Now, because this is an iPhone competition, we've also often looked at the image to see what it says about the capability of the phone to create an effect or to apply some sort of new look to the image. So some of the images, we just judged the competition, and we looked at a number of them that had heavily apped the number of images that were heavily apped,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were too much and over the top, but some of them we felt were representative of what the phone's capable of. And so we looked at those factors as well as we were judging.
I would add this, that when we look at an image in the same way as we might look at a painting or any other form of art, what we hope is that it will have some emotional impact, because the images should be attempting to connect with us. A bowl of cereal is probably not going to do it. A dancer in midair, which might be difficult with an iPhone, is probably going to catch many people's attention. So when I was judging yesterday for the mobile phone competition with Rad, what I was looking for was something that evoked a reaction in me, that stopped me in my track and excited me. And I think it was Rodin that said, art's only obligation is to affect the emotions, or words to that effect. And it can be a negative impact. It doesn't need to be something that you fall in love with. But as long as it stops and makes us think and react, then I consider the artist's goal has been met. And as a viewer, I've been impacted.
Sharon Gamble with photographers Freddie Calvin and Rad Drew. They're two of the jurors for the JCC's mobile device phone photography competition and exhibit. The exhibit opens on August 13th and runs through September 5th. There's an opening reception on Thursday, August 14th from 5:30 to 7:30, and a free one-hour introduction to iPhonography, a class taught by Rad Drew at 7:30 that night. For more information, visit jccindy.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll get the big preview of this year's 10th Indie Fringe Festival.
I'll get the big preview of Clues Memorial Hall's new season.
And I'll talk with artist Phil O'Malley about the really, really big painting that he's making at Clues. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? Supersize Us. So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.